Philo Torah Zoom Shiur, international Zoom Shiur, because Judy is still there. Yep.
Yeah.
Linda, for Yom Sheni, Monday, the fourth day of Kislev, 5786, corresponding this year to November 24th. Let's do Tehillim. And David's leaving reminded me that we'll soon have to give him something else to say if we get those last hostages back, the bodies. Yeah. Now, how come I don't see what I'm looking for? Apologies. I put them up and they just don't stay up sometimes. Elim Kuf. Mizmor Latoda, Hariu Adonai Kol Haaretz, Ivdu et Adonai Besimcha, Bo'u Lefanav Birnana. Du ki Adonai hu Elohim, hu Asanu, V'lo Anachnu Amo V'tzon Marito. Bo'u Sha'arav Betoda, Chatzerotav Betehila. Hodu lo baruchu shemo, ki tov Adonai le'olam chasto, va'ador va'ador emunato. Tehillim Kaf. Lam natzeach mizmor le'David, ya'ancha Adonai b'yom tzara, yisagev ha'shem Elohei Ya'akov. Yishlach ezrecha mikodesh u'mitzion yisadeka. Yizkar kol minchotecha v'yolatecha yadash nesela. Ten lecha chilva vecha v'chol atzadcha yamale nirana b'shua techo v'shem Eloheinu nidgol yamale Adonai kol mishalo techo ato yadati ki hoshia Adonai mishicho ya'anehu mishmei kodsho b'gvurot yeisha yamino elev orechev v'elev asusim v'anachnu b'shem Adonai Eloheinu nazkir Hema koru v'nafalu v'anachnu kamnu v'nitodad. Adonai Hoshiya ha'melech yaneinu v'yom koreinu. Kuf Lamed. Shir ha'ma'alot mima'amakim kraticha Adonai. Adonai shima v'koli. Tehiyena aznecha kashuvot l'kol tachanunai. Im avonot tishmorya Adonai mi'ya'amod. Ki imecha hasalicha lema'an tivare. Ki viti Adonai kiveta nafshi v'lidvaro hochalti. Nafshi l'Adonai mi shomerim laboker, shomerim laboker. Yachel Yisrael el Adonai ki im Adonai hachesed v'harbei imo fedut. V'hu yifde et Yisrael mikol avonotav. Mark.
Itain Adonai Esrayavino, Kamima Leno Nigafim Lif Nehem, Akados Baraku, Yishmorbi, Asilas, Hayalino Mikol Sarabatuka, Mikol Nego Mahala, Yishlak Barahaba has a Fabahama, Isaiah Dehem, Yadber, Sona Inu Taftehem, the Adarain Befesser Yeshua Uva Paris Nisahon, Vikuyamba Hem Hakasup, Ki Adonai Elohim, Alech Imahem, Lahilahem, Lahem, Imoyevahem, Lahoshia, Aspem, Shinomar, Amen.
Amen. Av harachamim shochein meromim hu yifkod barachamim et achinu shenehergu al kiddush Hashem ha'am v'ha'aretz yizkareim Elohim l'tova im shar tzadikei olam v'viveim mehirah lekever Yisrael Kamoshin Amar Ve'elamot Vienu Yonuchu V'shalom Al Mishkavotam V'nomar Amen. Together. Achenu Kol Beit Yisrael Hanatunim Batzara Uvashivya Ha'omedim Bein Bayam Bein Bayabasha Uvein Ba'avir Hamakom Yurachem Aleihem V'yotziyem Mitzara L'Yirvacha Umeafela Laora Umishibud L'Geula Hashta Ba'avala Uvizman Kariv V'nomar Amen. You have been muted. Let me start with something that Vayetze added, the third component of an interesting observation. Let's go back to Avraham Avinu and Sarah Imenu. Sarah, after she notices, after the birth of Yitzchak, sees that Yishmael is not behaving properly. There's a whole machloket among Mefarshim what exactly was happening. But let's take the view that Sarah saw that Yishmael would not be a good influence and maybe even harmful to Yitzchak. And she tells Avraham to get rid of him. Avraham doesn't want to do that. He hesitates, more than hesitates. It didn't sit well with him. And God had to say to them, to him, listen to Sarah. From which there are Mefarshim who say Sarah was a greater prophetess than Avraham was a prophet, because she saw things that he didn't see. To put it differently, Avraham was blinded by his love for his son Yishmael, even though he knew ki v'yitzchak yikare l'cha zara. Yishmael was his son too, and he didn't see the problem because of his love. Sarah had her eyes open and more clearly. Next generation, Yitzchak loves Esav, is blinded literally and figuratively to Esav's character, and he intends to give Esav the major bracha. Rivka, seeing more clearly and correctly, guided according to some opinions by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, engineers the getting of the bracha for Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov is blinded by his love for Rachel. He fell in love with Rachel at first sight. And that's, hold on, excuse me. Hi, David. It's okay, I'm giving a shiur, so I can't answer now. Yeah, right. My son-in-law, the doctor, calling me as my doctor, not my son-in-law. Yaakov Avinu is blinded by his love for Rachel, and according to Mefarshim, Rachel and Leah were complicit with Lavan in deceiving Yaakov. In other words, the straight reading of the Parsha this week is that Lavan agreed to marry off Rachel to Yaakov, in payment for which Yaakov would work for him for 7 years. And when the time came, he substituted Leah. But commentaries point out that Leah and Rachel also cooperated with Lavan, which was necessary for Rachel to give over her passwords, so to speak, to Leah. And they saw more clearly that in order for Am Yisrael to come from them, they both had to be married to Yaakov. So you have three avot, each of which didn't see the very important things that the Imahot saw: Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah. And it says something for the likes of me and Mark and Daniel. For all of you females, you definitely win the prize. And it doesn't stop with them. Asenath, daughter of Potiphar, was very instrumental in saving Yosef's life because she saw things that Potiphar didn't see. And Tamar was smarter than Yehuda. All Yehuda saw was an opportunity for use of a prostitute, and Tamar knew, either instinctively or with Ruach HaKodesh or whatever, that they had to have children who would become a child who would become the father of the whole David line all the way till Moshiach and beyond. And Yocheved was the one who saw more than Amram. And Miriam, five-year-old Miriam, saw more than Amram did. And she was instrumental in his getting back to Yocheved. Moshe Rabbeinu was born, and Miriam watched over him, and Bat Paro saved him, and was able to overcome her father's decree. It just goes on and on like that, not mentioning Devorah, not mentioning Esther, and there are others as well. So for the women in this Zoom shiur, kol hakavod to your tribe. Okay, that's one. Second, I wanted to share with you, I don't do it regularly, but every so often, I like to share with you the Parsha topics of Al HaTorah, because every single time I read them, I am overwhelmed by the fact that the first time and the second time and the third time I learned these stories, especially in the book of Bereishit, it was straightforward. So here in Parshat Vayetze, you have, all right, I'll ask it to you. You could nod one way or the other. Yaakov goes to Haran. Lavan takes him in and makes a deal with him. Work for 7 years and you'll be able to marry my daughter. Which came first? The 7 years of working or the marriage? The answer is, it depends on what Perush you ask for. Because what Lavan said to Yaakov is Male Shavua Zot, finish out this period of seven. And the question is, was he referring to 7 years that he had to complete before he would marry? Or, actually, that's the second time, or the 7 days that followed the wedding? Anyway, there are mefarshim, as you'll see, and I'm not going to do it by heart. I'm going to read and excerpt from it. Let me get it quickly. Okay. This is called The Birth and Relative Ages of Yaakov's Children. Question. 12 children, that's 10, 11 sons and Dinah. 12 children in the space of a perek and a half in Bereishit, this week's Parsha, describe the rapid births in a period of 7 years. Let's explain that first. If Yaakov comes to Lavan and he makes a deal to marry Rachel and he works for 7 years for Rachel and then gets Leah and has to work another 7 years for Rachel. So if it was after 7 years that he worked for Rachel and then got then got Leah, then the births took place in the second 7 years that he was working for Lavan. And that would mean 12 births in 7 years. Make the calculation yourself. So the commentaries say, I mean, the question first is, were they full-term births? Could they have been multiple births? Is it possible that any of the 12 births occurred before or after this brief period? Did the pregnancies overlap? And then you have a subsequent part of the question about Shimon and Levi. Later in Parshat Vayishlach, yeah, next week's Parsha, the rape of Dina by Shechem, and Shimon and Levi wiping out the entire male population of a city. How old were they? According to the chronology presented in the Torah, they were 7 years old. You know any 7 years old who could get together with their brother and wipe out all the population of adults in a city? So that's part of the question. Then later you have Yehuda marrying Tamar, or Yehuda marrying Bathsheba, and then having three sons, and marrying off one to Tamar, etc., etc., etc. But then the Torah, in counting the 70 souls that went down with Yaakov Avinu to Mitzrayim, mentioned not only the sons of Yehuda, but grandsons, Chetzron and Chamul. And when were they born? I mean, you're talking possible 8-year-old parents and a 40-year-old grandparent. Problems. These are the questions that are asked. Now, the answers, the style of Al HaTorah, if you haven't done it, taken my advice to take a look at it. The style of these Parsha topics is to first raise a bunch of questions and then give an overview and then details of how different Mefarshim handle the issue. In attempting to make sense of the various chronological issues relating to the births and lives of Yaakov's children, commentators offer an array of possibilities. Many of them are consistent in the methodologies they apply to resolve each of the issues. Each of the issues referring to the killing of the people in Shechem and the subsequent business with Yehuda. Okay, so you have the following, and look how different they are. Premature and precocious. According to many Mefarshim, Midrashim, as well as Rashi, Chizkuni, who's a commentary on Rashi, and Balei HaTosfot, the pregnancies for each and every one of Yaakov's children were extraordinarily short and were thus able to fit within a 7-year time span. Similarly, Yaakov's children reached physical and sexual maturity at supernaturally early ages. And this accounts for the very young ages of Shimon and Levi and Yehuda's descendants when they sired offspring in the subsequent stories. Got that? It just, you need to say that. Now, I don't remember my first Chumash teachers saying that. They just said Reuven was born, and then Shimon, Levi, and Yehuda, and then Rachel didn't have children, so she gave Bilhah over, and Dan and Naphtali were born, And then Leah stopped giving birth, so she gave Zilpah, and it's all in this parsha. And Gad and Asher were born, and then Leah was able to give birth again, and she had Yisachar and Zvulun. I don't remember someone saying, "Hey, how could that happen if it was only in 7 years?" But when you look at it, hopefully as an adult, you see more than you did when you were a kid. Seder Olam and Pirkei Avot de Rabbi Eliezer, Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer, speak of 12 consecutive 7 month pregnancies, which adds up to the second set of 7 years Yaakov worked for Lavan. Tosvot take this a step further, arguing that the pregnancies themselves lasted only a little more than 6 months, and there was a need for interim days of ritual purity after each birth. Okay. This position takes the order in the text extremely literally, and thus assumes that each pregnancy was completed before the next one began. Moreover, according to Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer, each of Yaakov's sons had a twin sister born with them who was to be their future wife, thus leaving no room to suggest that any of the tribes were twins to each other. The alternative solution that they were a set of twins is proposed by Radak and Rabbi Yosef Bechor Shor. Other Meforshim. Seder Olam Rabbah and Bereshit Rabbah, two Midrashim, posit that Yaakov spent 2 years in transit on his way back from Lavan's home. This allows one version of Bereshit Rabbah to arrive at an age of 13 for Shimon at the time of the incident in Shechem, and to justify the description of him as an Ish, because he was over the age of Bar Mitzvah. The Vilna edition of Bereshit Rabbah, as well as Rashi, proposed that Levi too had reached the age of maturity by the time of this event, and so on and so forth. So that's one way to look at it. The Torah says one after the other, that's how it was. But then you have the following. It's called achronological order. The Torah favors thematic order over chronological order, and therefore presents the pregnancies and births as consecutive, even though they needed to overlap with each other to fill into the 7 year time frame. Similarly, positing achronology, meaning out of order, resolves the difficulties in the later stories in Sefer Bereshit, with the story of Shimon and Levi and Shechem transpiring only many years after Yaakov returned from Lavan's home and Yehuda's first marriage occurring several years before the sale of Yosef. Now, that gets more complicated next week, when the standard way of looking at it is Yehuda fell out of favor with his brothers, because they saw the devastation of Yaakov to the absence of Yosef. And they blamed Yehuda because he was the one that says, let's not kill him, let's sell him. And they did. And then it says, Vayered Yehuda, that he went down, literally, physically down to Egypt, and, or wherever he went down, and psychologically down from the esteem that his brothers held him in. And this turns it around. This says that in order to understand and explain how Yehuda could have fathered and grandfathered children in a certain period of time, say that the episode happened of his marrying before the sale of Yosef. And that's Ibn Ezra, Sforno, and Lekach Tov. You get I don't know if I'm getting it across. It's not only a frustration, it's eye-opening to something that Maybe there are some times where you would like to say something like that, and you say, well, how could I say that if Rashi says that? Let's go back to how old was Rivka. The first thing that I learned was she was 3 years old when she married Yitzchak. So when you said a three-year-old marrying, yeah, okay, so it was different then. But that's the way you dismiss it. But Rashi says it. So when you learn the Chumash and you hear from your teacher, he tells you 3 years old. Then you read Rashi and you say, oh, that's where he got it from, 3 years old. But unless you take a peek at other Mefarshim that say, no, she was 14 years old, which makes, a little bit more sense, you might have felt skeptical. When I say you, I don't mean you specifically. I mean me or anyone with a question mark would have felt skeptical that a three-year-old can be married and not only be married, but carry a large jug of water on her shoulder and draw water repeatedly to feed camels. And a 14-year-old, I could see it. I don't see it with a 13, with a three-year-old. Anyway, my point is that if I didn't know that there were other Mefarshim that say differently, I would hesitate, maybe more than hesitate, to open my mouth and say, maybe she wasn't just 3 years old, maybe she was older. And then, boom, there it is. The Ramban and this one and that one say 14 years old. And then it gives us the comfort, I don't know if that's the right word, to say, I like that commentary better. And I favor that one. To me, it makes more sense. And it's not just arbitrary throwing out. Where they get 14 from, there's a chronology. Where do they get three from? There's a chronology. But each one has assumptions that lead to their conclusion of the age of Rivka when she got married, or in Parshat Vayetze's case, whether the births were unusually short, which, by the way, can happen. We know that there are preemies, but a preemie needs more time to develop after it's born because it was born early. So here we're talking, and the word supernatural was used in the description. And, that's fine. Once you say supernatural, just like when people say Kabbalah, okay, I don't ask any more questions. You tell me it's Kabbalistic, it's Kabbalistic. What do I know? And when you say supernatural, I accept that because I believe in miracles and I believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu and that he does miracles when he wants and when it's needed. And that could be the story. But when you see a commentary that says otherwise and explains why is this here, because Ein Seder Mukdam U'Mucher BaTorah, and the way that the Al HaTorah put it is thematic sequence more than actual chronological sequence. So you finish with a topic and you add another topic and then you go back, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be in order. Okay, so these commentaries posit a number of possible variations of the pregnancies. We did that already. Oh, Bilhah's pregnancies overlapped with Leah's first pregnancies. So let's look at that. You look at the Psukim, Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda. Yehuda, from the word Todah, Bilhah, Leah, thanks HaKadosh Baruch Hu for having four children. And then chronologically, Rachel realizes that she's not giving birth, and she gives her handmaiden as a wife to Yaakov, and Dan and Naphtali were born. Now that stretches the timeline, making each pregnancy shorter. But if you say that after, let's say, after Leah had two children, Leah gave Bilhah to Yaakov, and he fathered Levi and Yehuda at the roughly the same time as Dan and Naphtali, then you save yourself time, and it fits in a more natural way to the time thing. With Leah's and Zilpah's pregnancies with Gad and Asher overlap with Leah's later three pregnancies of Yisachar, Zvulun, and Dinah. While the Ibn Ezra and Sforno suggest that it was Bilhah's and Zilpah's pregnancies which overlapped, Ibn Ezra also raises the possibility that Zvulun and Dinah were twins, and that Dinah was or that Dinah was born much later. So figure that one out. The overlap in pregnancies enables 12 full-term births during the course of Yaakov's 7-year work stint. Shimon and Levi, they say, according to this, were just 13 or 14 years old, and Yehuda's offspring is another issue. Then you have another thing, expanded time frame. The births of Yaakov, of his first 12 children, took place over a period of almost 14 years, not 7. Again, you ask a kid in elementary school who knows Chumash, and he won't know this. I didn't. I don't know if you did. I don't remember having teachers who went into Mikraot Gedolot with other Mefarshim the first times that I learned Chumash. Didn't get that till high school, and I don't remember. So here you have the following possibility. Yaakov married Leah immediately upon starting working for Lavan, and thus Yaakov's first 12 children were born over the course of 13 years. As a result, Shimon and Levi were about 20 at the time of the incident in Shechem, and there is additional time for Yehuda's descendants to sire their own offspring before descent to Egypt. Ralbag explains that Yaakov's request that he be allowed to marry before beginning his first 7-year stint, and Lavan gave in to that. And they explain the wording in the Psukim differently. However, Ralbag opts to render it as referring to the 7 days of Sheva Brachot. Now, by the way, you say Sheva Brachot in Yaakov's time? I mean, that's not a Torah law. There's no mention in the Torah of 7 days after marriage. But that's the way Mefarshim works sometimes. According to Ralbag's timeline, Shimon and Levi were approximately 20 when they took revenge against the city of Shechem. And Yehuda's offspring states that whatever. Then you have Yosef born later. Yosef was born only after the completion of Yaakov's, this is a theory, of Yaakov's first 14 years working for Lavan, and the 12 children were born over a span of up to 12 years. The incident with Shechem happened only much later when Shimon and Levi were already 20. Birth of Yosef, according to Reb David Tzvi Hoffman, Yosef was born only sometime after Yaakov had already completed both of his 7-year stints. Birth of Dina, according to one Perush, she was born 3 months after Yosef. And some suggest that she may not have been born until after Yaakov returned to Eretz Yisrael. And this would explain why she is absent from the encounter with Esav. That's interesting, because there's other Mefarshim that explain how come Dinah was, that Yaakov hid her. Okay, so basically, we're talking about expanding our minds. Now, I don't know how you react to this. I know that I have mixed feelings. I was very happy to accept Pshat, and if there was a question, so there was a question. And the fact that reputable mefarshim, who we recognize as legitimate, we're not talking about a newfangled guy that comes up with these out-of-the-box theories to explain certain things. And we say, so who is he? I mean, he's arguing with Rashi, he's arguing with the Ramban. No, but if the Ramban has something to say, and the Ralbag has something to say, and Radak has something to say, to me it's an eye-opener, and it fleshes out the stories. And I want to repeat what I said, but I want to give you a broader picture of that, about liking one commentary more than another. And it doesn't have to be consistent. You can say, I like the Ramban on this pasuk, and on that other pasuk, I sort of favor what Rashi says, and I would rather go along with what this one says there. And this is not just in biblical stories. This is in halacha also. I saw this as a question. If you rely, let's say, on Shulchan Aruch, Mishnah Berurah and Shulchan Aruch, and then you find that someone else of reputation, unquestioned reputation, disagrees and says something different, can you follow it? And the answer is pretty much yes. I'll give you a little tiny example. And maybe the women won't know this, but maybe they will, and the guys probably do know it. Friday night, you're davening Amidah, and you're taking longer than the shul. And you're still finishing your Amidah when the shul said Vayechulu. Now you're finished. What do you do, David?
Say you should say Vayechulu with somebody else. Have somebody else say it with you.
Okay, so the standard procedure, you knew that, Mark? Any of the women know that? Okay, so as long as I'm off on that, let me give you that as an example. In the Amidah of Friday night davening is Vayechulu HaShemayim Va'aretz, and you're going to say it on Kiddush, at Kiddush. And in addition, after the Amidah, we say it out loud. So first you should know why we do it again and then again. All right, so doing it at Kiddush is different from davening because Chazal told us not only Zachor et Yom HaShabbat L'Kadsho with words, but Zachor et Yom HaShabbat L'Kadsho with wine at the table. Fine. So Vayechulu in the Amidah and Vayechulu at Kiddush. Why the Vayechulu right after the Amidah? Mark, do you know? David? Okay, so I'll tell you, it's very strange. When Shabbos and Yom Tov coincide, we daven a Yom Tov davening, which doesn't have Vayechulu. And Chazal wanted us to say Vayechulu at davening, so we said it right after the Amidah. Okay, so now, it doesn't happen every year, but whenever Yom Tov coincides with Shabbat, we'll say Vayechulu after davening. How come we do it every single week? The answer is lo plug, meaning they decided no distinction. If we do it sometimes, we're going to do it always. So it's really unnecessary, except by the rule of no distinction, lo plug, and we do. Okay, so now what David says is the standard practice. You missed it because you were still saying the Amidah. You go over to any person you choose and you say, can you say Vayechulu with me? And the two of you say Vayechulu, even if that guy has already said it. He says it again with you. Why? Because Vayechulu is considered edut, testimony. Testimony to God's creation of the world and his resting on Shabbat. And testimony requires two people. Okay. So that's the standard practice. Comes the Chazon Ish, who was no slouch. The Chazon Ish, I saw in a sefer of his practices, was approached by a yeshiva bacher in his shul to say vayechulu with him. In other words, here's a yeshiva bacher who went longer than the Chazon Ish's Amidah, and he goes over to the Chazon Ish, no less, and says, "Can you say vayechulu with me?" He says, "I don't have to, say it by yourself." So the Chazon Ish's shita is, it does not need another person. And he points out, in the Amidah, you said it by yourself. At Kiddush, you don't need two. So why all of a sudden, when you repeat it, do you need two? So the Chazon Ish Shita goes against the mainstream way of doing it. I asked a Shaila, can I follow the Chazon Ish Shita there? I regularly miss Vayechulu in my minyan. They're always faster than me. And I was told Chazon Ish is reputable. Even though you don't follow every single thing that he says, you could do that. And you don't need to find someone else. Now, when someone comes up to me and says, "Can you say Vayechulu with me?" I do. And then later I tell him, "By the way, the Chazon Ish says you don't have to do that." But that's an example. It's a little tiny example where someone reputable says something different from the mainstream presentation of halacha. And you're allowed. Maybe you have to ask a shaila of your rav, but you could do it. I do it a lot with the Vilna Gaon. I don't follow the Vilna Gaon all the time. But there are things of the Vilna Gaon because reasons exist for it, and the reason appeals to me. My best example is Havdalah first or Hanukkah candles first, and since we're in Kislev already, we could talk about that. Where I grew up, like I'm sure all of you did, you say Havdalah and Motzei Shabbat first, that finishes Shabbos, then you light your Hanukkah candles. The Gra, the Vilna Gaon, was so insistent that Hanukkah candles go first, provided it's after Shabbos. And that means that you daven Ma'ariv, or at least you said Baruch HaMavdil Bein Kodesh L'Chol, and the time on the clock is after Shabbos, that you delay Havdalah and immediately light candles. And his reason to me is very appealing. His reason is candles are not excited, they're itching to get lit. They were supposed to be lit at sunset, or at least first Seita Kochavim, but you had to say, sorry, candles, it's still Shabbos. And Havdalah is laid back. By the way, the argument for Havdalah first, in addition to finishing Shabbos and then starting your Motzoi Shabbos Chanukah part, is also Tadir B'Sheino Tadir, Tadir Kodem. Havdalah is more frequent than Chanukah candles. Notwithstanding that, the Vilna Gaon says Tadir applies when the two things that are competing have equal urgency for now. But when one is laid back like Havdalah, you could postpone Havdalah. It's not Shabbos anymore, but you could still delay Havdalah. And furthermore, delaying Havdalah rather than rushing it does not show that you want to get rid of Shabbos as quickly as possible. So his halacha is that you light Chanukah candles first. And there's a story, because again, I have a sefer not only with the halacha of the Vilna Gaon, but they have footnotes with anecdotes. And he says that a guy came up to him who was late for Ma'ariv, missed Ma'ariv, and he went to the Vilna Gaon, and he said, "I didn't daven Ma'ariv yet. Should I daven Ma'ariv?" Not talking about Havdalah. Should I daven Ma'ariv first? Vilna Gaon said, say Baruch HaMavdil ben Kodesh L'Chol, light your Hanukkah candles, and then Daven Ma'ariv. Ad Kedei Kach, to get them in faster. So that appealed to me. And when I came to live in Israel, I had never known that. But I came on Aliyah. I was confronted with that as Minhag Yerushalayim. Not that everybody does it in Yerushalayim, but it's called Minhag Yerushalayim. And when I saw the reasoning for it, it appealed to me. And I asked the Shaila. So the first thing I was told is you have to ask your father's permission to do it differently from the way you grew up with him. Second, no second, just that was it. The Hatorot Nedarim I had to do for stopping to wear tefillin during Chol HaMoed, but that's another issue. But anyway, what I'm trying to say is that not if you disagree. Oh, I think it would be better if we did this. No. But if there's something in a reputable psak that appeals to you, ask a shiloh whether you can follow that instead of the standard. Yeah, David.
In shul, they light the candles before Havdalah.
Correct. Okay,
It's
so
not.
Shulchan Aruch says that in shul, the reason that they do Hanukkah candles first is maximizing Pirsumei Nisa, publicizing the miracle. If you wait till after Havdalah, people are out the door already, and it wouldn't be Pirsumei Nisa. And that's the only reason you light Hanukkah candles in shul, because nobody's yotzei with that. It's just for Pirsumei Nisa. But the Shulchan Aruch says a very unusual psak. For Havdalah versus Hanukkah candles that night at home, de'avad kamar avad u de'avad kamar avad, meaning take your pick. So I took my pick as the Vilna Gaon, and every time I ask for a show of hands, not in this forum, wherever, overwhelming is Havdalah first, because that's what we've always done. That's what makes sense to me. That's Tadir v'sheinah Tadir. And there is something about the Graz Shita of insisting that candles go first, that appeals to me very, very seriously. Others, for example, I mean, I don't know how passionately the Vilna Gaon expressed this opinion. I get the feeling that he was passionate about it. But I also read the Maharalmi Prague, who's no slouch either, who was passionate that you can't light Hanukkah candles before you say Havdalah. And the argument that I gave before that Shabbos is over, Havdalah will wait because you don't want to rush Shabbos away. So the Maharal says, what do you think lighting candles does? I mean, if you want to say you want to sing extras, Mirot, that's Shalashudas, and you want to take your time, fine, Havdalah will wait. But you're doing something so vachadik as lighting Hanukkah candles. How could you do that before Havdalah? And the Vilna Gaon says, yeah, you have to do that before Havdalah. So it's not stama machloket, it's a passionate machloket, and it depends on which reasoning appeals to you more. And of course, there's another angle here which goes against what I'm saying, and that is, which is more likely to cause a person to mess up? In other words, light Hanukkah candles first. Did you say Baruch HaMavdil? Oh, I forgot. Well, it was still Shabbos for you, so you weren't allowed to light Hanukkah candles. And by the way, at Havdalah, you have to be careful who holds the candle, who lights the candle. It can't be someone who didn't daven Ma'ariv or say Baruch HaMavdil. And it's very common that they will give a candle to someone to hold for Havdalah, who maybe shouldn't be touching it yet. But that's another thing. Okay, so.
Well, one other thing, getting back to Vayechulu, when the first night of Pesach is on Friday night,
You still say Vayechulu. You just don't
you
say
say, still say
Vayechulu. You
Vayechulu,
don't
you don't
say
say the other thing.
Rachamein Sheva. By a hulu is every Friday night.
Well, that strengthens what you were saying
Yeah.
before.
But these are interesting things. Now, as long as we're talking about Friday night, you sing Magen Avot. Vilna Gaon says that's like Chazaret Hashatz. The Chazan is supposed to say it, which he does, and we're supposed to listen to it. But go tell that to people. Doesn't work. Everybody likes to sing it.
Well, usually the chazan, even if they nowadays, even if they say vayechulu to get the chazan says it with the tzibur, the chazan still is still saying it by himself, singing it or saying it.
Yeah, that's vayechulu is not the problem because
No,
vayechulu.
I'm saying magen. I'm saying magen avos. The chazan is still saying it by himself
He says it after everybody sings it,
after everybody else. Yes.
correct, which is not ideal based on what I just told you, that we're not really supposed to say it. But I saw an interesting shita. If the chazan has a powerful voice and people will tone down singing along with him to the point where he could be heard, he doesn't have to wait until it and say it again. And there are people who don't say it again, which is wrong. And this is not even counting certain minyanim which shouldn't be saying it altogether. You know that a temporary minyan, let's say you gather people in somebody's house.
During COVID, we had that.
Huh?
During COVID, we had that
Yeah.
in the backyard minyan, and they said, "Don't say it." But we said, "This is the same minyan that we have indoors usually." But
Okay, so when COVID came, not when COVID came, when in my shchuna, they have this minyan that goes from apartment to apartment. This was before COVID. I suggested that we maybe are not supposed to say Bracha Mayin Sheva, to which the guy who was there many years before me said, "Go ahead, you tell him." In other words, he brought up the subject and they said, "No way, we're not saying it." On the other hand, there was a guy who asked me to make a Friday night little siddural for his minyan in his house. And it has Mincha for Erev Shabbos and Kabbalat Shabbat and Ma'ariv. And he said, "You don't have to put in Bracha Me'ein Sheva because we don't do it, because it's not a real minyan." On the other hand, I saw something interesting. You know the rule by Tachanun, Nefilat Apayim.
only if it's a Sefer Torah.
Sefer Torah. Or, according to some, anywhere in Yerushalayim. So,
You do or don't.
you do, even without a Sefer Torah. In other words, if you're in Beit Shemesh or you're in Ra'anana or Rehovot, you don't do Nefilat Apayim unless there's a Sefer Torah. But in Yerushalayim, you do it without a Sefer Torah. So I saw someplace that the same applies for Bracha Me'ein Sheva, which means I didn't have to raise the problem with my minyan here because they have on whom to rely. But even though it's a temporary minyan, I don't mean temporary because it's not, it's a permanent minyan, but it's
Not an
a
official base
shua, but
method.
it's not in a shul. No Oren Kodesh. They bring a Sefer Torah for Shabbos morning, but Friday night there's no Sefer Torah. But I was told there's a shita that you could do it one way or the other. Things. Look, all of these things, I don't know how the women are taking to it because I sort of veered into territory that's not that frequent for women. Although I was in Modi'in this past Shabbos. And I was very impressed by the fact that the Ezras Noshim was packed. And there's a minyan here that is packed also. And then there's another minyan where there's one woman. So it's a matter of what you do. There are women who dafka go to shul, and it's a problem, by the way, because candle lighting, but not now, in short Friday, in summertime, early Fridays, it's a problem because they have to light candles and then you don't get to shul in time. But even now, Yerushalayim is not bad because you light candles and you have 20 more minutes to get to shul. In Modiyin, they daven 10 minutes after candle lighting, and fewer women go, although there were a lot of maybe girls, I don't know.
Circling back to the beginning when you were talking about the births of the Bnei Yaakov, you were saying it sounded like you were talking about the first 14 years, the 7 years for Rachel and Leah, and plus seven. And were you also considering the 7 years afterwards that he worked to make his own
It was
Yaakov
six.
work?
It was six, by the way. And there are Mefarshim who say that that overlapped also. In other words, he had two jobs, which is very strange because you think of the way he speaks to Lavan. Daytime was boiling hot, and nighttime it was Kerach. By the way, let me finish with that. When Yaakov is mouthing off to Lavan, of how dare you suggest this because I work for you, and when it was freezing cold at night, he uses the word kerach. Targum Onkelos translates the word kerach into Aramaic with the word galida. The same word that Hebrew borrowed for ice cream is Aramaic for ice. And on that note, I will wish you a good day.
Thank you.